This is a story from Genesis 4 after Adam and Eve had been expelled from the garden. Adam and Eve were together, and Eve became pregnant and bore a son, their firstborn, and she called him Cain. And she said, I have, with the help of the Lord, been able to create a man. And she got pregnant again and had a second child, Abel. They both grew up, became older, full-grown men, and Cain was the tender to the fields and the crops. Abel was tending the sheep as a shepherd. It came time for the harvest one year, and Cain brought forth some of the crops from his field and offered it to God. Abel also brought an offering. He brought the choicest of the firstborn of his sheep in his flock and offered that to God. God was very pleased with Abel's offering, but did not look favorably upon Cain's. So Cain became angry, and he was bitter. And God said to Cain, why are you angry? If you do what is right, you will be accepted. If you do not, then you won't be accepted. Consider this and be warned. Sin is at your doorstep. It's crouched. It will devour you. You must subdue it. You must learn to master it. A little bit later on, Cain asked Abel to go for a walk. And so they went to a walk through the fields. And Cain attacked and killed Abel. And God asked Cain, where is your brother Abel? And he said, how should I know? Am I my brother's keeper? God said to him, what have you done? For even now your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. You will be cursed. And despite the fact that you will try to work the ground, nothing will grow from you. Nothing will grow for you at all. You'll be forced to wander. Wander as a homeless vagabond. And Cain was overcome. He said, this punishment is too much for me. Not only are you kicking me away from the land, but you're also expelling me from your presence. Anyone that sees me, they'll attack me and kill me. But God said, no, they will not kill you. For anyone who does dare will face punishment sevenfold. And God placed a mark on Cain so that anyone who saw him would not kill him. And Cain went away and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. This is the first story of humankind that's outside of the Garden of Eden. And it contains what is the potential for human greatness and human achievement and human goodness. Also, its worst, creating life, the first child born, and then the first life taken. intimacy among a couple, and then jealousy among brothers. Worshiping God, bringing offerings to God, and then lying to God. Living in the presence of God and then alienation from God. Once again, being expelled from the presence of God. Cain has three strikes in this story, three strikes against him. And does he learn his lesson? Maybe, maybe not. By the end of this chapter, what is not included in the story this morning is that he goes on to find a wife, to find a land of his own, to found a city, to have descendants of his own. Maybe he did learn his lesson. He stopped his wandering. Maybe he continued to harvest jealousy against God who showed favor to his younger brother. What was the offense of Cain's offering? What was it? We don't have very many clues. It just says that God didn't accept it. But there is a few words in the translations that kind of give a little subtle clue. It says that Cain brought some of the harvest. Some. And it said that Abel brought his best, the firstborn of his flock, the most prized meat. Ah, a better offering. Perhaps a lesson that we can take away from this is to always give God our best, to bring God our best. God, in a sense, tells him this, to do what is right, presumably to bring the best offering next time. God warns him about sin, to master sin, to subdue sin, to repress the sin. But he continues to harbor that and feed the angry beast. And sin does indeed pounce. Instead of reforming his ways, he's bitter. And Abel becomes the scapegoat for his anger at God. It's tragic. It's violent. And even when God kicks him out, sends him on his way, says that the fields will no longer respond to his work, he says, "It's all about me, God. This is too much for me to bear. I will be killed." He still doesn't face up to his sin, to his guilt. Did he ever learn? Did he ever learn? I would like to think perhaps he did, since God showed him grace and forgiveness. Notice that God did not strike him dead, that he will be able to continue on with his life, that he will even be protected by God despite his murder. Given a second chance at life. But why? Why did this have to happen in the first place? Brother versus brother. It's a common theme in Genesis. Jacob and Esau. You recall that story where Jacob wanted to take his brother's place as firstborn so much that he was grabbing on to his brother's ankle when they were born. Joseph, all of his other brothers, very jealous and angry at Joseph because his father, their father, showed him the most favor. It exists today as well. It's out there. Jealousy, resentment harbored against a sibling. Our childhood experiences, what they were or weren't, are deeply formative for us. And us as parents often precipitate these feelings, often showing favor to one over the other. These feelings of resentment and bitterness that linger sometimes until adulthood. It's tragic. It's tragic. Because our siblings, if you think about it, are very often our longest held relationship while we are alive. The truth is, and this is true today, that sometimes that closeness does not always breed love, does not always breed kindness. That even though you might grow up with the same values, the same experiences, the same parents, the same environment, the same advantages and disadvantages of life, that you might still have something against your sibling. It does not prevent hatred, even violence in some cases. If you are a student of history, and I know some of you are, you'll know that the greatest threat to the ruler's rule throughout history was usually the king's brother, or maybe even a sister, sometimes an uncle or a nephew. And a lot of these have violent ends, don't they? An assassination, a coup. This has been known to happen to whole groups of people. One group of people hating another group of people just purely based on proximity. Our greatest rivals in life are very often the ones whom we have the most in common with. Growing up, I grew up in Bedford, Ohio, and our rivals in high school was Maple Heights. They were right next to us, the community right next to us. They were about the same size. We didn't like anything about Maple Heights. The rivalry between our football teams and the basketball teams spilled over into everything else, even cross country. Even our bands hated each other. We used to have a football game between the bands that got pretty nasty. And as I got older and got into adulthood, I realized that really the only difference between us and Maple Heights was the cost of housing. That's about it. Virtually everything else, demographics, economic statistics, were the same right across the board. Racial breakdown. How about Cleveland and Pittsburgh? We don't like each other, right? Those of us that grew up in Cleveland, we didn't like Pittsburgh. But historically, if you look at the two cities, there's a lot of parallels in industry and circumstance. We don't like Michigan very well either, do we? Ah, we got some groans there. Just out of curiosity, I Googled some statistics about numbers between Ohio and Michigan. Looking at the stats, we have similar unemployment, almost identical, similar racial breakdown, close to the same population. We actually have more people here. Industry, very similar. We have more agriculture here. They have more auto industry there, as you would expect. But virtually, the percentages are almost the same. Why do we hate? Why do we hate what is so much like us? Who are we hating? Why are we hating them when we have so much in common? There was a movie that came out in the year 2000 called Remember the Titans. Anyone remember that? I see some nods over here. It's about football. And it takes place in Virginia when the high schools were being integrated in the 1970s. And, of course, there was a lot of turmoil. And that meant that the football team was going to be combined. Two high schools becoming one, a black high school and a white high school. Two coaches that have a winning reputation and big egos would have to work together. It was the football team that was the litmus test for the rest of the school because, of course, they had to get started in August when the school got in session a few weeks later. The two of the main characters were students Jerry and Julius, and they were both star talented linebackers, one black, one white. And of course, they hated each other at first. They didn't think they had anything in common with each other. But it was their friendship that paved the way for the rest of the team, and really, the whole town. Of course, they went on to success. It's based on a true story. They won the state title that year as an underdog. But before the state title game, Jerry, one of the linebackers, got into a very bad car accident. And he was paralyzed from the waist down and could not walk and, of course, then could not play. The whole team felt his loss because he was one of the stars, an all-state performer. Julius comes to see him, very emotional. And Jerry greets him as a brother. He says, "I hated you, Julius, at first because I was scared. But I came to realize that I was only hating my brother." They embraced. We desperately need to come together in this age of divisiveness. Seems like everything is becoming divisive. Even hurricane relief has become a divisive issue. We need to be able to cease our rivalries, to realize that we are really only hating our brothers and sisters in life. To lay it down, to be the better. I read a story this week about what happened after that prodigal son parable told by Jesus. And of course, this is a fictional story. But those two brothers grew up in the same household. Their father died. And when the father died, he split up the land equally. Half for the older brother, half for the younger brother. The older brother, of course, being the responsible one who did everything the father asked of him. The younger brother being the one who was the prodigal, who left and went away, spent his part of the inheritance. They still had resentment towards each other. They believed each other to be their father's favorite. The younger brother believed that the older brother was the favorite. Always the right-hand man. One reason why he left is because he didn't feel that he was wanted. The older brother, of course, was resentful towards the younger brother for spending his inheritance, for being seen as his father's favorite with that big party. So they took each half of their land, and they didn't speak to each other much, only when they had to. They took their half. They grew up a little bit more. The older one got married. He had 6 children. The younger one, despite his carousing at a younger age, stayed single. And as the years went on, though, they got older, and their hearts began to soften just a bit towards each other. The younger brother thought to himself, "It's not fair for my older brother, for he has 7 other mouths to feed. I think I should give some of my grain to him, because it's just me after all." Well, around that same time, the older brother was thinking similar thoughts about his younger brother, thinking to himself, "You know, when I'm old, I'm going to have all these children to help take care of me and probably grandchildren. My younger brother's not going to have anybody when he gets old. I think I'm going to give him some of my grain so that he'll have enough. So that evening, each of them took some of their grain and put it into the other's silo. The next morning, both of them got up, looked in the silo, and there wasn't any difference in their silos. They said, well, I must not have taken enough. I'm going to take more tonight. And so each of them took more, filled up each other's silos. And this went on for a while until they had to take so much grain that they had a cart full of grain. And it took a while, and they met each other on that hillside exchanging grain. They realized what was going on here. They each were thinking of each other, filling up each other's silos, worried about each other. And they embraced as brothers. May we have the wisdom. We started talking about wisdom with Proverbs this morning. May we have the wisdom of the Father who loved each of those two sons equally, even though his love was manifested differently and shown differently. May our hearts be softened like both of those prodigal sons. May we cease the rivalries that exist in our hearts towards our brothers and sisters. Amen.